As Janice said, I have been or was a professor of recreation and leisure studies for many years. And I started this research back in the early 80s. Long time. And back in the early 80s, the sociologist had a hypothesis that because of technology, we would have more time for leisure. Now, some of you are giggling because you're thinking that has not come true. So that was a false hypothesis, wasn't it? And in fact, probably most of us would say that our lives have become more stressful, more hectic, more hurried than what we could have ever imagined. And so my teaching and so forth on leisure has had to readjust itself to our current needs. And so I wonder, do many of you think that there is more time in your lives today than there were several decades ago? Probably not, unless we're retired, as myself, and then we might think, oh yes, I do have more time. But what we're going to be looking at is that all of our time is sacred unto the Lord. And that's a very important part of my message this morning. But in our lives, it seems to me, as I've reflected back over my vocation at Gordon College, that busyness seemed to become a virtue. It is something that we tend to wear as a badge of purposefulness or identity. I even have my older son who lives in Pennsylvania, so he'll never know that I've said this about him. But every time I call him, and he's in his mid-30s, has two little girls, very high-stress vocation, and I call him. The first things out of his mouth when I ask him, how was your week? It was busy. It was good. You know, and so I kind of smile to myself. I think he never heard me lecture. But by God's grace, I trust that the Lord will speak to him as he will speak to all of us at different points in our lives. I would like to suggest that it takes a tremendous amount of courage to live, just to live. And within that courage, this is nothing new. We see it back in the Old Testament days. We see it in Jesus's days. And in the passage that Janice read to us from Joshua, we see that God has told Joshua, and then Joshua tells the people, be strong and courageous. Be strong and courageous. There's a litany that goes through the first about 9 verses of that, and then Joshua says the same thing to the people, be strong and courageous. Now, what I'd like for us to just quickly recall is that in verse 9, God told him, do not be frightened. And do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, probably Joshua heard this as when God spoke to Moses, because back in Exodus 33:14, God says and makes this promise to Moses, this, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest. So that was God's promise to Moses. Aaron heard that because he was probably right outside the tent. And so Joshua is holding on to this promise that God's presence will go with him. Now, as we just read, they are crossing over the Jordan River. And isn't it interesting that he identifies 3 tribes to cross over and be at rest. Now that's interesting to me. When I think in terms of they have been wandering in the wilderness and now God is saying go cross and rest, but then there were the men of valor who were to go across and be in action. And so a concept that is here is that God calls us into action and he also calls us to rest. And also, there is a somewhat of a symbiotic relationship between these tribes. They were to support each other in action, and they're to support each other in rest. And then God, or Joshua, tells the people of valor, and then you will receive rest. So my question to you is, where are you? Are you being called into action right now? Or are you being called into rest? And a follow-up question, does it take courage for you to rest? Because that rest is not just body rest, it's really a soul rest. It's a rest that trusts God to be sovereign. It's a rest that gives God delight. We find that in Isaiah chapter 58. When we enter his rest, he takes delight in that. So God takes delight when we take delight in rest. Now, isn't that phenomenal? And that is something for us to embrace in our daily lives. Now, I know over the last several weeks, Pastor Jim has been encouraging to consider the role of the Sabbath in your individual lives and your life together as a church community. And I know he's also emphasized that the Sabbath rest is a means of resilience and that it is to be received as a gift. So in my study of leisure, I've had to look at what is the theological root for leisure. And the theological root comes from embracing the Sabbath. That's the theological root that is there. And so I just want to highlight what I would identify as six primary Old Testament reasons that the Sabbath is to be observed. And this might just be a little bit of repeat of what Jim has given you, but I think it's important to look at this because of where I'm going to be going in our discussion today. First, that God gave a day of rest as a model. And we find that in Genesis 1, 31 through chapter 2, verse 3. And in that, okay, he's created, and then he rested. Not because he was exhausted, but because he wanted to take delight in all that he had created. And that's a major point. He was not tired. He didn't sleep. But he took delight in all that he had created. So that Sabbath day was like a day of celebration for the Lord. And he kind of, it's just like, wow, I've done all of this. And it's good. In fact, not only is it good, it's very good. And so he blessed that day, and he called it holy. A second primary source for understanding why we observe the Sabbath is that it is a gift to be received. And as an example, in Exodus 16, verses 21 through 30, they're in the wilderness. And you recall the story that every day God gave manna to them. And yet on the sixth day, he gives them double manna. It's a gift. They didn't deserve it. They sometimes rebelled to that. They tried to go out and pick it up, and it was full of maggots. But it was a gift, and they could celebrate then the rest that he was giving them. Obviously, number three, is clearly a commandment, and that is in each citation of the Ten Commandments. And in fact, it's the longest commandment in words. And some theologians would say that it is probably the one commandment that is least observed in our society. Fourth, it's a sign of the covenant. In Exodus 31, 12 to 17, it was a sign that God had sanctified them and that they were chosen by him. So you see, as part of the covenant, the Old Testament covenant, and we will be moving up then to the new covenant. It's a humanitarian ordinance. So in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 12 to 14, it is a commandment in which they were to allow their slaves to rest and their livestock to rest. Then, I don't have this in my notes, but it just came to my mind. You got to stop and think that the year of Jubilee, which was to be every 50th year, everybody was to be set free. Well, that's never happened. You see, that's part of the ongoing rest that his people have never observed. And in some ways, I'm not sure that we do either. But it's letting the slaves, the livestock, the land have its period of rest. It's part of God's rhythm. And then the sixth one is that it is a time to remember deliverance from Egypt. And this is in Deuteronomy 15 to 16. Sorry, I made a mistake there. It's a time to remember our deliverance, their deliverance from Egypt. And if you will recall, part of the quote-unquote last straw that caused him to cross over and say, we're leaving, is that the Pharaoh was telling them that they were to make bricks without straw. The last straw. Okay? So that was like they were just totally spent with trying to work in order to serve the Pharaoh. And that was what then caused them to think in terms, we got to leave. Okay, we got to leave. And that brings us up to then to the story of Moses and Joshua. Now, having kind of given that to you as a background, what I'd like to do is to move up to more contemporary days. To the Orthodox Jew, do any of you have Jewish friends? A few of you, okay. If they are Orthodox, they will probably consider the Sabbath as being central to their lives, to the extent that they will count the number of days up to the Sabbath, and then they will count the number of days after the Sabbath. Have any of you experienced that with any of your Orthodox Jewish friends? If they're not practicing, then this is probably not a part of their lives. But to the Orthodox Jew, that's the way it is. And so what I'd like for us to do is to explore the meaning of the Sabbath to Jewish people, practicing Jewish people. And so I have a handout for you. And if you will take that out. And what I want to share with you is something that really enlightened me many years ago. And it was an understanding of the Sabbath from an Orthodox Jewish perspective that just changed my whole perspective on what does the Sabbath mean. So on one side of your handout, it says The Sabbath by A.J. Heschel. And this is his book, Abraham Joshua Heschel. Have any of you come across this book? A couple of you. Okay. Because this is the book that is oftentimes referred to by many of our contemporary authors writing about the Sabbath. They almost always go back to his presentation of what it means. So I'm going to read this to you, and then I'm going to give you a couple of minutes just to reflect on, does this change your perspective on the Sabbath as it did to me? So he says, and this is a quote from early in his book, "The Sabbath as a day of rest, as a day of abstaining from toil, is not for the purpose of recovering one's lost strength and becoming fit for the forthcoming labor. The Sabbath is a day for the sake of life. Man is not a beast of burden, and the Sabbath is not for the purpose of enhancing the efficiency of work. Last in creation, but first in intention. The Sabbath is the end of the creation of heaven and earth. The Sabbath is not for the sake of the weekdays. The weekdays are for the sake of the Sabbath. It is not an interlude, but the climax of living." Wow. You see, I think our Protestant perspective on this is that the Sabbath is just to restore us, you know, getting our errands done, so now we can go back to the real part of life, our work. But what Heschel, and he was a Jewish rabbi, he lived during the time of Martin Luther King, he marched with Martin Luther King, and this book also was being used in Jewish synagogues at that time, because even many people of the Jewish faith had lost this concept of the Sabbath. Now, when we look down through, and I'm going to read these metaphors, because as we read these metaphors, we're then going to be able to see that Jesus fulfills this. So let's read down through. The Sabbath is the most precious present mankind has received from the treasure house of God. It's a sanctuary time. It's not a date, but an atmosphere. A day for the sake of life. A delight to the soul and to the body. It's a vision into eternity. It's a reminder of the two worlds, this world and the world to come. It's a day for joy, holiness, and rest. A day of rest and a day of freedom. It means the Holy One. A day that ennobles the soul and makes the body wise. The inspirer. The other days are the inspired. Created to be a day of tranquility, serenity, peace, and repose. The day on which we learn the art of surpassing civilization. It is an armistice in man's cruel struggle for existence. A day of abstaining from work and the thought of work. Isn't that an interesting one? I used to give that to my students. A day of detachment from things. Listen to the next one. To be welcomed as a bride. It's like a queen, and we are to prepare for her. It's a sign of the covenant, an example of the world to come, and an ascent to the summit. It is a Sabbath that inspires all creatures to sing praise to the Lord. Does that stretch your perspective on the Sabbath? It did me, because I just thought it's kind of like a 180-degree turn from what is the work ethic that we tend to go into in our Western culture. A work ethic that we can take it back to the Puritans if you want to. We can look at today's society with the emphasis upon the economy. But I would guess, and I know many of you, as myself, we're retired, so it's like, okay, we've paid our dues in a way. But when we stop and we think that it is the Sabbath that gives us delight, or should give us delight, that can replace that sense that it's just about my work. It also kind of sets the stage for what I'm going to be talking about as holy leisure. So as we can understand the significance of the Sabbath to the Jewish people, we can start to see how Jesus is the fulfillment of that Sabbath. And I'll give you a few examples. In Matthew 12, 28, Jesus says, "For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." You see, we are not worshiping the Sabbath anymore. We worship Jesus. He has come to fulfill the Sabbath. In Mark chapter 2, verses 27 and 28, he says, "The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." He is Lord of the Sabbath. We no longer, like the Jewish people, they will worship the Sabbath. And in fact, what we know is that it was when the Pharisees were constantly trying to catch Jesus disobeying the Sabbath, what they thought was the rules of the Sabbath, that's when they got so upset. Sabbath was so central to their lives. But Jesus is saying, no, no, no. It's not that the Sabbath was created, that you were created for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was created for you. And then in Paul's writing to the Colossians, in chapter 2, verses 16 to 17, Jesus becomes the fulfillment of the Sabbath. Because Paul says that the Sabbath is a shadow of the things to come, but the substance is Christ. Therefore, we worship Jesus, not a day of rest. It's given to us as a gift. And this gift of the Sabbath, I think, can influence the theology behind leisure. Because Jesus is with us all the time. He extends rest to us all the time. So what is leisure? You're wondering. Okay. Many of you, if we had more of an interactive aspect right now to our service, I would be trying to gather from you, what does leisure mean? We just did that a little bit in Sunday school. Well, leisure is more than just free time or freedom from our work. It's much more than just our recreational activities, as good as they can be. It certainly is much more than just diversion, although occasionally we have to have diversion, don't we? But the type of leisure I'm talking about, I've labeled as holy leisure, but that's not my thoughts on it. This really goes back to a Latin words, odium sanctum. Odium sanctum. And this was used by the early church fathers. We interpret it as holy leisure. And I want to read this to you. Odium sanctum refers to a sense of the rhythm in life, an ability to be at peace through the activities of the day, an ability to rest and take time to enjoy beauty. It is an attitude of heart and body that promotes an awareness of the presence of God in all aspects of life. It means more than free time or recreation. It is a spiritual state of being. So, that idea that it is a spiritual state of being transcends all aspects of our lives. It is living in rest when we are enjoying the beauty of today, and it enters in, I think, even in some of our daily tasks, but we have to choose it. I remember, I'll talk a little bit more about this in a minute, but I was a single parent, and I remember the laundry that was piling up on my bed. And I remember, you know, I sometimes had to do the laundry on Sunday afternoon. And I could choose to either embrace that laundry as something I have to do, or I could do it with a sense of joy and thankfulness and satisfaction that God had given me two sons to have laundry in order to follow. Do you see what I mean? So we can carry this leisure approach to life into many of our daily tasks. Maybe not all. It becomes hard. It's not pie in the sky. But it is a choice. So I encourage you to look at leisure as a choice, because the root word for leisure in Latin is to be free. To be free. Not freedom from, but to be free. So what are you free to be? Who are you free to be? And that carries out in what we do. Now, to just take this a little bit further, how much time do I have? None. Okay. I don't want to take away from your Sabbath afternoon activities. But I do think this is important. This thinking on leisure, a lot of it comes from a very classic book, a philosophy book, if you will, and it's called Leisure, the Basis of Culture. And it dovetails with what Heschel was talking about. And it's called Leisure, the Basis of Culture, written in about 1949-50, okay, following World War II. And he was a Swiss-German philosopher. So the book, again, the title kind of says it all. Leisure, the basis of culture. Now, isn't that interesting? We kind of think, well, it should be all about our work that's going to determine our culture. But it really is in how does a culture approach leisure that can have a dynamic impact on where that culture is. So, again, if we had more time, I'd be asking you, what do you think about our culture? And where is it right now? Do we have any form of a holy leisure in our culture? And I dare say, it's escaping us. But I do also say, I think there is hope within the communities of faith. And that's why I'm so glad that Jim is talking about this. And that we're reflecting on it. So let me go on. In Piper's book, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing this, holy leisure is a freedom to let go of our agendas. Now let me just stop there. Think about that. A freedom to let go of our agendas and our compulsions to constantly work and be active. He goes on to say, again, I'm paraphrasing, it takes courage to be leisured and at rest, because it is a willingness to surrender and trust that God is sovereign. It is a perspective on life, and we receive the gift of time to rest, wonder, experience joy, pray, express creativity, experience the joy of relationships, nature, music, art, etc. You see, it is a receptive state of being. It is a receptive state of being. We no longer have to be just doing. And it's that receptive state of being that has us living in the grace of Jesus. Living in Sabbath, I think, takes courage because it is dependent upon trusting the Lord to use us for his kingdom's sake and to rest and enjoy our lives with him. Piper suggests that this is divine worship. To receive and to rest is divine worship and celebration. And in our Protestant doctrines, if any of you have subscribed or read the Westminster Catechism statement of what is the chief end of mankind, what is it? Enjoy the Lord and enjoy him forever. You see, we sometimes forget that last part, and enjoy him. So holy leisure gives us an opportunity to enjoy God, to enjoy his creation, to enjoy whoever he has created you to be in your own uniqueness. And I would then say that this is living in Sabbath, because Jesus is with us all the time, and we rest in him. But we need to remind each other of that. So in case you think that this is just wonderful thinking on the part of a retired leisure professor, I have been thinking about this for many years. As I said, I started in the early 80s. But many of you know my story a little bit, but 25 years ago, my husband left our marriage, and I became the single parent of two young boys. They were 5 and a half and 9. And I was teaching leisure. Oh boy. And at times life seemed very overwhelming. But it was my teaching on the Sabbath and holy leisure that gave me a foundation to live in hope and healing. It is not so much that I held the Sabbath, but as the Jewish people frequently will say, the Sabbath held me. The Sabbath held me. And it wasn't just a day of rest, but it was living God's rest throughout the week. It was thinking that I didn't have to be working all the time in my educational vocation. That it was when I would take a walk at the end of the day, go for a bike ride on the weekend, just sit and reflect, read, be with friends, that would fill me up and give me that hope and that healing that I could go back into my work. You see, leisure is a gift. The Sabbath is a gift, and leisure is a gift. And we live in a society where either we can receive that gift or we can reject it. And I do want to put out this caution. There are a lot of people who just live for their leisure. And as I was driving here this morning, I'm going past Manchester Country Club. And I'm seeing the golfers out there. The tennis players are coming out. And then there was the pickleball group. And then there was the soccer down by Gordon College. And they are certainly playing a lot. And if you were to ask them, does their playing of soccer or pickleball, all good activities, granted, are they worshiping the Lord at that time? It would be an interesting question to ask them. But we know the truth. We know the truth that it is Jesus who has set us free, and that it is in that freedom that we can enjoy the life that God has given us. So in closing, and I won't have time to go over this, and I know I wouldn't, but I just want to draw your attention to the back side of the handout I gave you, or that was given to you. And this is for your homework. At the top, I've identified many of the places, not all, but many of the places where it talks about Jesus' teaching and his lifestyle that can remind us to live the Sabbath that is fulfilled in him. He is Lord of the Sabbath, and he has invited us to come into his rest. So there are some examples you can go back and look up yourself. And then down below is the practical how-to. And these are just some suggestions that you can, again, take home and discuss with your family. Is there anything here that you would like to carry into this next week? You probably can't do it all unless you've already been living some of this. But I think there are a lot of suggestions as to how you can take what I've been talking about, that is the importance of Sabbath, that God calls us into action, he calls us into rest, and that Sabbath rest is not an end unto itself, it is fulfilled in Jesus. So these are just some, if you want to look at them and think about some practical suggestions. And in our social hour, if you want to chat with me anything more about this, I would certainly welcome. Thank you all for, I know this is a different type of a message perhaps, but I pray that the Lord will use it to restore, reconnect you with the living God, a God that loves you, a God that wants you to embrace and enjoy his creation. Take the choice. Make the choice to allow that to happen. Let's pray. Lord, to you be the glory for what you have done in each of our lives and how you have called us to be people that is sincere in our action, and that we also are people who want to live out your rest, as first in the Sabbath day rest, but then carried out into all of our lives with the daily tasks, the ordinariness of life, the joys of life, and even, Father, in the hard times. Help us to see that all of life is a gift, and that it's in those moments in which we can reflect on your beauty and the wonder of your creation, that we will be filled with a newness of life because Jesus is with us in every aspect. Again, Father, to you be the glory. Amen.
We will respond with hymn number 446, which I'm not sure we're as familiar with this tune. So would you play it through once for us, please?